chapter 17, verse 26, the Apostle Paul says to the Greeks at the Areopagus on Mars Hill, "From one person, God made all nations who live on earth, and he decided when and where every nation would be." From one person. We all descend from Adam and Eve. The name Eve means the mother of all living. And so we all can trace our roots all the way back to Noah and all the way back to Adam. Now, today is a special day in America. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it's a day that we honor and remember the civil rights leader and the man who had a dream. And he had that famous speech back in August of 63. So it's almost 60 years old. He proclaimed it August 28th, 1963. I share this dream that Martin Luther King shared way back when, almost 60 years ago. He said, "I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream where little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls and walk together as sisters and brothers." That's a wonderful dream. Now, I believe that that dream has been hijacked. I think it's been hijacked by the Marxist philosophy that has infiltrated our country, this idea that, we're going to divide people and sins from the past, from what has been done 100-plus years ago, that still carries today, and we need justice, and we need all these things that are trying to be corrected. As one person put it, you're holding people today responsible for things that they didn't do, and you're holding people not responsible today for the things that they are doing. And one of the things about Martin Luther King, he said, "I stand in the middle between those who aren't doing anything and those who want to violently protest." He was totally against violence. So today on the program, we want to talk about the civil rights movement, and we want to talk about the roots of the civil rights movement. And my good friend, Bill Federer, who is an author, who's a speaker, who is an historian extraordinaire, wrote a great article that I just read yesterday, and all about the roots of the civil rights movement and about Martin Luther King and Booker T. Washington and other people that are very instrumental in this discussion. And so, Bill, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Hey, great to be with you, Jeff.
Well, I appreciate it. I was getting a little nervous when they said at 8:05 you hadn't called in yet.
Well, I'm glad to be with you.
Okay, so Bill, you wrote this this great article, and it has lots of history in it, and I know that that's your forte, is history. So as we think about the civil rights movement, as we think today about Martin Luther King and the dream, we need to also think about how he was influenced in his life. And you go back to the roots of his life and the people that influenced him. And let's talk a little bit about that, Bill, because some of the names we don't hear in the civil rights movement that we need to hear. One of the names especially, Booker T. Washington. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, so Booker T. Washington was born a slave in 1856, and he remembers his mother crying when they read the Emancipation Proclamation. He was 9 years old. He never met his father. His stepfather had ran away before the war to West Virginia and worked in the salt furnace where they would mine salt and then a coal mines. And after the war, Booker T. and his mother went there And his stepdad made him work all day, but he talked him into letting him go to school in between work. And so he taught himself to read. And then he walks 500 miles to Hampton, Virginia, goes to the Hampton Institute, which was started by Union General Samuel Armstrong Chapman. Interesting individual. He led the 8th U.S. Colored Troops during the Civil War. And they marched into Petersburg. They helped bring about the victory at Appomattox. And afterwards, General Samuel Armstrong Chapman formed the Hampton Institute. And Booker T. Washington went there. He talks about how his teacher, Mrs. Lord, and she taught him how to read the Bible, and he came to cherish that. And then after he graduates, he goes to the Wayland Baptist Bible Seminary in Washington, D.C. Then he goes to West Virginia and works in the salt furnace. And then he teaches Sunday school at an African Methodist Episcopal church. And then he goes back to speak at a graduation at Hampton Institute, and he speaks so well, they offer him a job being a teacher. He teaches for a couple years, and then they're starting another Freedmen's College in Alabama, Tuskegee, and they're looking for somebody to be the president of it. And it was Samuel Armstrong Chapman that recommended that Booker T. Washington be the president. And he is the first black man who's a president of a university. He goes down there. He has the students bake the bricks that they make the buildings out of. He gets a black MIT professor to come down, and he designs the architect for the buildings. He gets George Washington Carver to come. And then he goes and he meets people and asks them to donate money. And he ends up meeting Carnegies and Rockefellers and all these different people. And he ends up meeting President Taft and McKinley and Teddy Roosevelt. And he even gets invited over to England, and he meets Queen Victoria. And so he builds it up to being this organization. And his idea is, here's a quote from Booker T. Washington: "In the sight of God, there is no color line. And we want to cultivate a spirit which makes us forget that such a line is there anyway." He says, "I've always had the greatest respect for the Salvation Army, especially because I've noted it draws no color line in religion." And then you have quotes from Booker T. Washington, where he said, "I would permit no man, no matter what his color might be, to narrow and degrade my soul by making me hate him. With God's help, I believe I've completely rid myself of any ill feeling toward the Southern white man for any wrong he's inflicted upon my race. I pity from the bottom of my heart any individual who is so unfortunate as to get into the habit of holding race prejudice." And quotes, Booker.
Yeah, so Bill, that would be quite a departure that we see today, especially with the Black Lives Matter and all the things that they would chant. Why do you think, when you look at where we are today, because as I started the program, you know, Martin Luther King's dream that we wouldn't be judged on the color of our skin, but on the content of our character, it doesn't seem like we judge anybody on the content of their character anymore. It's all the color of their skin. And so I guess here's my question. How did we go from a guy that was so influential and had such a great message for the black community, a guy like Booker T. Washington, to where we are today?
W.E.B. Du Bois, and he was a black man in the North, in Massachusetts, and he criticized Booker T. Washington. W.E.B. Du Bois demanded reparations, and he wanted to stir up this spirit of antagonism, where Booker T. Washington, his idea to improve the race relations was to follow the path of all the immigrants. So you had Irish, German, Jewish, Chinese immigrants coming into America, and they would always come in at the lowest level of the social and economic ladder. They would be poor, they would work really cheap, and they would be discriminated against. But then as they pooled their money and they worked hard, They gave their kids education. They would end up buying businesses and starting businesses, and they would become economically successful and gain everyone's respect. And so Booker T. Washington says, okay, we're out of slavery. Let's work hard. Let's become successful. Well, W.E.B. Du Bois said no. He said that we need to agitate. And he ended up going to Germany. And W.E.B. Du Bois described Germany as a great socialist state of the day. And in 1936, he goes over there when Hitler's in power. And he gives an interview in the Stadt-Zeitung und Herald newspaper, and he praises the Nazis for handling their economy. And, of course, the Nazis went on to kill 6 million Jews and millions of others. And then W.E.B. Du Bois goes to the Soviet Union shortly after the Bolshevik Revolution, and he praises the socialism in Russia. He goes back there again in 1926, 1936, 1949, 1959. And, of course, these Soviet policies ended up killing 40 to 60 million people. And then Du Bois praises Marx, and he praises Karl Marx's atheism. And W.E.B. Du Bois writes in his autobiography, he says, I came to the head of a department at a college in Atlanta, and the engagement was held up because I balked at leading in prayer. I flatly refused again to join any church or sign any church creed. I think the greatest gift the Soviet Union gave to modern civilization was the dethronement of the clergy and the refusal to let religion be taught in public schools. W.E.B. Du Bois, 1958, goes to East Germany, which is communist. They give him an honorary doctorate. W.E.B. Du Bois goes to China and meets Mao Zedong, and he praises China, which goes on to kill 60 to 80 million people. And so in 1961, Du Bois decides he's going to join the Communist Party. And he says, on the 1st of October 1961, I'm applying for admission to membership in the Communist Party of the United States. He goes to the University of Berlin. I consider myself a socialist. And I came back to New York, and I found many of the officials in the NAACP had a strong socialist element in the leadership. He says, I praised the racial attitudes of the communists. I began to study Karl Marx and Das Kapital, and I hailed the Russian Revolution of 1917. I could go on and on. And so this movement was opposite of Booker T. Washington. So Booker T. Washington said, let's work hard. Let's become financially successful. We'll rise in respect. And W.E.B. Du Bois said, let's embrace communism and let's pull down the system. A similar statement to W.E.B. Du Bois was Roger Baldwin, and he founded the ACLU. And he wrote, I am for socialism, disarmament. I seek social ownership of property, abolition of the property class, sole control of those who produce wealth. Communism is the goal. And then, of course, Roger Baldwin's friend was Margaret Sanger, who spoke at a Ku Klux Klan meeting and began a Negro project in 1939. She said, we don't want the word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister of the black churches, he goes, and the minister is the man who can straighten out the idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. And so here you have Booker T. Washington on one side and W.E.B. Du Bois on the other side. And Booker T. Washington says in 1911 in his book, My Larger Education, there is another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs. There is a certain class of race problem solvers who do not want the patient to get well, because as long as the disease holds out, they have not only an easy means of making a living, but also an easy medium through which to make themselves prominent before the public.
Right. Let me break in here. Bill, you're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. And we're talking to Bill Federer. We're talking about the Civil Rights Movement, Booker T. Washington, and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
The credit card debt happened when my daughter was born. I was using one credit card account to roll over into another credit card account, and it was snowballing.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
When I first called Trinity, the representative understood the need based on the situation. They were great people to work with. From the first phone call that I made, they had me on a track to mitigate the credit card debt.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
Working with Trinity gave me the ability to save thousands of dollars. My name's Doug, and thanks to Trinity, I'm debt-free for keeps.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Does the church still have relevance in the 21st century? This week, Alistair Begg begins a series titled, What is the Church? Find out how the Bible defines the church, who's in charge, and what your role is within it. That's our focus this week on Truth for Life.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Today's issues.
Hey, Fred, real quick, we got a service we want our listeners to be aware of that's free.
Yeah, in the day and age when most of the mainstream media, I like to say, are nothing more than lapdogs for the far left, I am so glad that American Family News is there, and that's our website, afn.net. We also offer a daily briefing with the top stories of the day from American Family News.
Today's issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month, and that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. Very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I'm the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. From His Heart is heard every weeknight at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Well, we're talking about the Civil Rights Movement. We're talking about the roots of it, and Dr. Martin Luther King, as today is the day that we honor him and honor his work and honor his dream. His dream is a dream that everybody, in my opinion, needs to be on board with. It's a wonderful dream, but I think that dream has gotten hijacked. I think, as we've been talking to historian Bill Federer, Bill, I think that dream would have been something that that Booker T. Washington would have had, that George Washington Carver would have had. You have a quote in your article that I want us to touch on. It's from Malcolm X. Malcolm X is not a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, but he said this, the American Negro is nothing but a political football, and the white liberals control the ball through tricks or tokenism and false promises. What do you think made him say that? I think that is true. What do you think made him say that?
Right. So you began to have socialism come along, and socialism would take over countries by doing critical race theory, where they would come into a country and observe and identify all the groups and categories and begin to label them as victims and oppressors, haves and have-nots, economically, racially, religiously, socially, ethnically. It didn't matter. The Sunnis against the Shia, the proletariat against the bourgeois, the working class against the business owners. They would go in and find division and then pit them against each other to stir up riots. And then they would in the confusion, seize power and overthrow the leader and install a Soviet puppet. And so these tactics were used through the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution and up through the 20s and 30s, and country after country would fall. And so they began to look at America and see how they could split the country. And it was Manning Johnson, who was a black man who was disillusioned, who joined the communists. And for 10 years, he was a communist. And he even ran for Congress in New York on the Communist Party ticket back in like 1937. And he said, I was told that decadent capitalist system is responsible and that mass pressure could force concessions. And that he said, we must unite and capitalism must go. And he said, then finally he realized that he was enmeshed in the Red Conspiracy. And he said, the grievances exploited to transform idealism into a cold, ruthless weapon against the capitalist system. That is the end toward which all these communist efforts among Negroes are directed. I saw communism for its naked cruelty, ruthlessness, and utter contempt for Christian attributes. And but he even said that Stalin was the one who came up with the idea in the 1930s. He goes, stirring up race and class conflict is the basis of the Communist Party's work in America. The evil genius Stalin and the other megalomaniacal leaders in Moscow ordered the use of all racial, economic, and social differences, no matter how small or insignificant, to start local fires of discontent, conflict, and revolt. Black rebellion was what Moscow wanted. Bloody racial conflict would split America during the confusion and demoralization. Panic would set in. And he said, what if 1 or 5 million Negroes die? Is not the advance of the cause worth it? A communist is not a sentimentalist. He does not grieve over the loss of life in the advancement of communism. And so this is the idea, is that they studied America, and Stalin says, hey, this racial difference is something that can be stirred up to bring division in America so we can overthrow their capitalist system and we can institute communism. And so this began to infiltrate into these wealthy universities, and including Harvard. So W.E.B. Du Bois got a scholarship to get a graduate degree at Harvard. And then W.E.B. Du Bois got a scholarship to go to the University of Berlin that was packed full of all these socialists. And then he starts visiting all these socialist countries around the world, and they sort of take him under their wing. And so they realized, and then it began to spread. And so there's a black man in Chicago that joined the Communist Party named Frank Marshall Davis. And that name may sound familiar because the young Barack Obama had him as a mentor. And Barack Obama mentioned him in his biography. And so Frank Marshall Davis was called to testify before the Senate and the International Security Subcommittee. And he, in the article, Frank Marshall Davis, A Forgotten Voice, it says, from now on, I knew I would be described as a communist. And frankly, I had reached the stage where I didn't give a blank. And during this time, you have Antifa type groups starting, like during the Vietnam, the Weathermen Underground. And one of the Weathermen leaders was Bill Ayers. And he was a communist. He says, I am a radical leftist, small c communist. Maybe I'm the last communist who's willing to admit it. The ethics of communism still appeal to me. I don't like Lenin as much as the early Marx. And of course, we all know Bill Ayers because he had a fundraiser at his house and launched the political career of a young Illinois state representative candidate named Barack Obama. And then Weathermen Underground, their early version of Antifa, the leader was Eric Mann. And we know Eric Mann because he trained Patrice Cullors, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. And Patrice Cullors in 2015 said, myself and Alicia Garza in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super well-versed on all sort of ideological theories. and noticing this move of wanting to come into America and stir up division so they could overthrow the country, Congressman Albert Herlong, he, in 1963, he was sort of like the Matt Gaetz of the day. He gave an address to the 88th Congress, and he talked about the goals and tactics the communists would use to take over America. And he said one of them was discredit the Bible, infiltrate the churches, replaced revealed religion with social religion, social justice, right? Wokeism.
Right.
And Alexander Solzhenitsyn was in the communist gulags for a dozen years, and he finally gets out and comes to America. And in 1975, he says, I call upon America to prevent those from falsely using the struggle for peace and social justice to lead you down a false road. And so they...
Let me interrupt, Bill. Let me ask you this. So a guy like Manning Johnson, as you write in your article, he finally saw that communism wasn't the utopia that it was purported to be, and he rejected it. How is it that others don't see that?
Yeah, well, it's subtle because they try to trick you to be more Christian than Christ. They say, well, Christians are tolerant. They'll tolerate everything. They're just a bunch of mush. You can kill babies and they'll just sit there and watch. They'll be tolerant. You can teach the trans agenda in schools, and Christians are so spineless, they'll let you teach something that Jesus would never teach. Right? Jesus says in the beginning, God made them male and female. And so Manning Johnson talks about how they come in with this different gospel, so to speak. He says, the new line went like this. Again, I'm quoting from Manning Johnson in his book, Color, Communism, and Common Sense, published in 1958. He says, the new line went like this. Jesus, the carpenter, was a worker like the communists. He was against the money changers, the capitalists, the exploiters of that day. That is why he drove them from the temple. The communists are modern-day fighters against the capitalists or the money changers. If Jesus were living today, he would be persecuted like the communists who seek to do good for the common people. Wait a second. They forget the gospel, that we're all sinners and we're all condemned to hell because of our sin. There's none righteous, no, not one. And Jesus died on the cross to pay for all of our sins, right? He's right. The Son of God. They completely changed the gospel into making Jesus into a Palestinian activist. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very subtle way they sneak in with this. And Manning Johnson talked about setting up situations that bring about racial bitterness, violence, and conflict, putting forth demands so unrealistic that race relations are worsened. Stirring up race and class conflict is the Communist Party's work in America. And
but now he rejected that, right?
Yeah, he did after 10 years. And then he began to expose it and wrote this book, Color, Communism, Common Sense. And the year after he wrote the book, he was in a car accident and almost died. And 2 weeks later was in a car accident and he died. And so there's mysterious things about, was he assassinated? Mm-hmm. And when you look at Martin Luther King Jr., and he was talking about bringing racial healing, and he was assassinated. In Alabama, you had a governor named George Wallace, and he stood in front of the school and would not let black students come in. And the he said segregation now, segregation forever. And it was Martin Luther King Jr. that refers to him in his famous speech, the Eye of a Dream speech, where he talks about the governor of Alabama with his lips dripping with racism. And let me just read you the quote here. So this is August 28th, 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. referring to George Wallace, this governor that stood in front of the school and University of Alabama, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And Martin Luther King Jr. said, I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racist and its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers.
Right.
So he condemns this Democrat governor who's racist down in Alabama, right? And then it brings out a whole other thing, that Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican. Booker T. Washington was a Republican. It was Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, that invited Booker T. in to the White House for dinner as a guest. And the Southern Democrats went crazy over that. And then you had the Southern Democrats, Robert Byrd, who was a KKK Klansman. And Hillary Clinton spoke when he died. Hillary Clinton said, my friend and mentor, Robert Byrd, it's almost impossible to imagine the U.S. Senate without Robert Byrd. He was the heart and soul of the Senate. And so Robert Byrd said you had to be in the Klan to advance in the Democrat Party. And so we have to understand that the Democrats were passing Jim Crow laws and black codes down in the Deep South. And they had the Plessy versus Ferguson, right? They made the blacks be on the back of the train car. And it was the Republicans that pushed through the 13th Amendment, ending slavery. The 14th Amendment, making sure the freed slaves were treated equally. 15th Amendment, making sure the blacks would not be intimidated at the polling places. And then you had a Democrat, Woodrow Wilson. And he segregated all the federal offices. And he said that segregation was a benefit to the blacks, and very, very racist. And Wilson even had a KKK film shown in the White House. And but then you had Eisenhower, and he integrated the military. And so it's not a black-white issue. It's actually a Republican-Democrat issue.
Bill, so when you talk about like W.E.B. Du Bois, he's got to have somebody funding him for all these trips that he's taking. He's got somebody pouring into him. And according to the Malcolm X quote, it's the white liberals that have been doing this all along.
Yeah, some of them are naive and thinking that it's okay to do this violence because it'll change the system. Others know exactly what they're doing, and they want to stoke the fires of division. And so this is obviously opposite the gospel.
Right.
What does the gospel say? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you. I mean, forgive, and you shall be forgiven. I mean, if you harbor unforgiveness, according to Jesus, you're not going to heaven, right? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us to the same degree. And if you're not forgiving those that trespassed against you, you're not going to be forgiven. Everybody's been trespassed against, some worse than others, but who was the worst was trespassed against was Jesus himself, completely innocent, and they crucify him. And what did he say on the cross? Father, forgive him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the spirit that you're allowing in you. Is it this vindictive one, or is this forgiving one, trusting God that he's going to bring justice in his time?
What would you say about Martin Luther King Jr.? Did he have a forgiving spirit?
I think he did. I think that he was, as he mentioned, standing in between those two forces, and he condemns by name the Elijah Muhammad black nationalists, and he says that that is not the way that, you know, that this answers to our country's problems are going to come. It's not going to be through this violent. It has to be through the gospel.
Amen. Well, we're talking to historian and author and speaker Bill Federer, and we're talking about the civil rights movement. We're talking about the roots of it. We're talking about Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Martin Luther King Jr. Fascinating discussion as we look at where it started and where it is today with Black Lives Matter and the violence that we have seen just in the last couple of years. And so you're listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we will take a quick break, and we will be right back. Don't go away.
Thank you. Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
So they asked me to enter my email address, and the next thing I know, I start getting emails from companies I never even knew existed. What's up with that?
Here at the American Family Association, you have our word that we won't give away, sell, or lease your email address to any other organization or company. We're thankful when you take the time to subscribe to AFA Action Alerts, 1 Million Moms, Engage Magazine, or any of our other online newsletters.
I'm Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. Valentine's Day, birthdays, anniversaries, all these days have something in common for many caregivers. They don't often come with a card from a loved one struggling with dementia or some other type of impairment. Think about this. Why not pick out the card that that loved one would give you if they weren't impaired? What about that parent? Even if the relationship is fractured, but you're still being a caregiver, why not get the card that an emotionally and physically healthy parent would give to you? Pick out the one that affirms the amazing person you are. What you're doing is reinforcing your own heart, your own self-esteem, and your value. See, this is important as a caregiver because all of these things take such a regular beating. It's okay for you to get your own card. And while you're at it, slip a $10 bill in there so you can buy yourself a treat.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope, a ministry for the wounded and those who care for them. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Did you know the abortion pill accounts for over 50% of all abortions? Preborn Ministry continues to stand with women in crisis in their darkest hour and bring hope and life. After Marissa took the abortion pill, she immediately regretted it, but Preborn was there for her.
Look at that baby. Look how beautiful he is. Look at that. Abortion pill reversal actually works. Let's hear his heartbeat. Oh, look how strong it is. Oh, praise God.
By God's amazing grace, this baby was saved, but many more need our help. To learn how you can be a part of rescuing babies' lives and sharing the heart of Jesus, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby.
Here are Tim and Riley Wildman for the AFA Foundation.
Riley, what is your title?
The director of AFA Foundation.
One of the best ways you can have income for the rest of your life and know that you will be supporting the ministry of American Family Association is to...
to give a gift to American Family Association and American Family Radio.
Do you also deal with people who want to leave AFA in their wills?
Yes, sir. That's exactly why they call. And that's why we also have another option besides a charitable gift annuity. People sometimes also call and do an outright gift or also leave us in their will.
Now, when anyone calls in and asks to talk to you ladies, will all of them talk in a Southern accent like you do?
Yes, they will.
Call Riley Wildman at the AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. And I just wanted to say, as you heard at the break, about Preborn. Preborn and American Family Radio are joining together to help save babies. And Preborn supports hundreds of Christian pregnancy clinics across the country because it provides life-saving services such as ultrasounds. And when a mom in crisis pregnancy situation, when she can see her baby on the ultrasound, it does wonders for her to say, I have to keep this baby. I can't destroy this baby. And so we are excited to partner with Preborn. And here's the ask. Your gift of $28 provides one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound and giving mom the opportunity to choose life for her baby. And your gift of $140 provides five free ultrasounds ultrasound sessions, reaching 5 women with the message of life. So you can find out more. Call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go online to afr.net. Well, we're talking to Bill Federer, and we're talking about the issue of civil rights and Dr. Martin Luther King, as it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Bill, I wanted to return to this this subject that we've touched on, but the quote from Manning Johnson when he was denouncing communism after, you know, he wrote that book in 1958, he says, "Communists manipulated churches into replacing the message of forgiveness of sins through faith in Jesus Christ with social justice." That was purposeful, that was targeted. And I had Daryl Harrison, who works for Grace to You, Dr. John MacArthur, on the program several months ago, and he said, you know, that's the sad reality in so many black churches. They're not preaching the gospel anymore. They're preaching black liberation theology. They're preaching social justice. And so what Manning Johnson said was exactly true, wasn't it?
Right, and it has filtered into lots of other churches as well. In Latin and South America, it got into the Catholic Church, and they called it liberation theology. And it's this idea that it's okay to kill a whole bunch of people because then you can bring about this new perfect utopia on earth where everybody's going to be happy. And it's like, okay, Jesus didn't say go out and kill people to tell them I love them. Right? You can defend your family, but you don't go out and kill people to... And so I thought it was interesting when you mentioned before the break on Martin Luther King Jr. He was a Baptist preacher, and he went to Baptist seminary, and he his dad was a Baptist preacher, and he brother, A.D. King, was a Baptist pastor, Mount Vernon First Baptist Church in Newman, Georgia. And so Martin Luther King Jr. went to seminary. He went to Booker T. Washington High School, and then he went to Morehouse College, which was founded after the Civil War by Baptist minister Reverend William Jefferson White. And it was originally named Atlanta Baptist College. And then it was renamed after Henry Lyman Morehouse, who was an American Baptist Home Mission Society secretary. And then Martin Luther King Jr. goes to Kreutzer Theological Seminary in Upland, Pennsylvania, and he graduates with a bachelor's degree in divinity. And then he attends the Calvary Baptist Church in Chester, Pennsylvania. And then King becomes the pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And then he's co-pastor with his father at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, and then he ends up taking over the church. So he is a Baptist minister. And then in 1963...
Is he preaching the gospel, Bill?
Yes, but he does get into the more of the civil rights. And I've talked to people that were sort of disappointed because he would give on this national platform, and instead of going back to the cross, and he would... You say, well, we have to right these wrongs. So he was wanting to right wrongs, and that was his priority, and unfortunately not necessarily the gospel. But he did say things like this: I stand in the middle of two opposing forces in the Negro community. One is the force of complacency. The other is a force of bitterness and hatred and advocating violence. He says, it is expressed in the various black nationalist groups that are springing up across the nation, the largest and best known being Elijah Muhammad's Muslim movement. I've tried to stand between these two forces, saying that we need emulate neither the do-nothingism of the complacent nor the hatred of the black nationalists. There is a more excellent way of love and nonviolent protest. I am grateful to God that through the influence of the Negro Church, the way of nonviolence became an integral part of our struggle. And so he over and over again says, we're not going to get into violence. And that's a very important part. So it was Ronald Reagan that made today Martin Luther King Jr. Day, right? Republican President Ronald Reagan. It was 1983. And Reagan said Dr. King had awakened something strong and true, a sense of true justice must be colorblind, and that among white and black Americans, as he put it, their destiny is tied up with our destiny, and their freedom is inexorably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And Martin Luther King over and over again referred to the Apostle Paul. He says, as the Apostle Paul carried the gospel of Jesus Christ, so I am compelled to carry the gospel. One day, the South will know that when these disinherited children of God sat down at lunch counters, they were standing up for what was best in the American dream, for what is most sacred values in our Judeo-Christian heritage. And so Martin Luther King Jr. is espousing and standing up for our Christian heritage. He is influenced by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was part of the German church that says, don't get involved. And so they would put the Jews on the train cars, and the church is responsible. So, well, that's the government killing people, you know, like abortion. That's the government doing it. We're not supposed to be involved in politics. And so the church would just sing louder while the cars full of Jews would be going by. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, I just can't live with this. I have to do something. And so he started the Confessing Church movement. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer came to America, and he came to New York, and he attended a black church. Adam Clayton Powell Sr. was the pastor. It was Harlem's Abyssinian Baptist Church, one of the largest Protestant churches in America. And they sang Negro spirituals. And Bonhoeffer said that this was like the first time that he felt his soul being touched, you know, by the Holy Spirit, because of the Negro spirituals being sung. And then Bonhoeffer goes back to Germany. Everybody says, don't go back. Don't go back. Hitler's going to kill you. And he goes, no, I have to go back. I have to stand up. And he does go back, and he continues to cause this confessing church to grow. And Hitler does kill him like 4 days before the Allies liberate that area. But nevertheless, it was the black church of Clayton Powell Sr. that influenced Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who Dietrich Bonhoeffer influenced Martin Luther King Jr. And so did Booker T. Washington and even Mahatma Gandhi, who was in India. And Mahatma Gandhi went to South Africa to work for a job, and he wanted to go into a church, but they wouldn't let him in because of his race, you know, him being from India. And so he would make statements like, I love your Jesus, but the people that follow him don't live the way he did. And so sadly, Gandhi, the quote that he gave, according to a missionary, said, Mr. Gandhi, though you quote the words of Christ often, why is it that you appear to reject his being his follower? He says, oh, I don't reject Christ. I love Christ. It's just so many of you Christians are so unlike Christ. If Christians would really live according to the teachings of Christ as found in the Bible, all of India would be Christian today. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the problems is you have the church not being the church, and then it turning off people. But Gandhi, who did love the teachings of Jesus, Gandhi was an influence on Martin Luther King Jr. to stand up against injustice in a nonviolent way. But again, you had these communists wanting to sow division and wanting to push it further past, just demonstrating.
MLK didn't subscribe to any of the communism, correct?
No, he was careful to always stand up for nonviolence. And following him with the black nationalist groups, they were the ones that wanted to say, okay, let's. And so they would usually have a protest in the day, and then the protest would be infiltrated by these communist agitators. And in the evening, when most of the people go home, that's when they would smash windows and set things on fire. And then you would have different entities, some even looking like they might be backed by the government, that have been infiltrated and want to bring the division and heighten it, that they would infiltrate the rallies and then stir up the violence so that the innocent group would get blamed for the violence. But in America, it was actually Billy Graham that helped launch Martin Luther King Jr. to national prominence. Mm-hmm. So it was in 1957, Martin Luther King Jr. attended a Billy Graham crusade in New York. And Billy Graham wrote in his autobiography, "One night, civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whom I was pleased to count as a friend, gave an eloquent opening prayer at the service. He also came at my invitation to one of our team retreats during the crusade to help us understand racial situation in America more fully." So Billy Graham invited Martin Luther King Jr. to give an opening prayer at his rally there. And Billy Graham shared that he had a conversation with Reverend King. He said his father, who was called Big Mike, called him Little Mike. And we asked, and he asked me to call him just Mike. And
well, okay, so Bill, let me ask you this. If Martin Luther King were alive today, seeing where we are in the civil rights movement, what do you think he'd say?
I think that he would notice that his movement had been hijacked, because he over and over again said that we must not follow the road to violence. That he over and over again said, don't let it degenerate into violence. So here's a quote from Martin Luther King, August 28th, 1963. "Now is the time to open the doors of opportunity to all of God's children. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence." And Martin Luther King said again, he goes, "I have two honest confessions to you, my Christian and Jewish brothers. I stand in the middle of two opposing forces in the Negro community, and one's the force of bitterness and hatred and comes close to advocating violence." And he again condemns that. He says, "This movement is made up of people who have lost faith in America, who have absolutely repudiated Christianity, and have concluded the white man is the incorrigible devil." So Martin Luther King Jr. is condemning this Elijah Muhammad's Muslim movement as having lost faith in America, repudiated Christianity. And, of course, he comes back and he goes, "I'm like the Apostle Paul. I'm preaching the gospel." So,
amen. Well, Bill, we're running out of time, but I want to thank you for being on today. You're a good friend. I appreciate all the wisdom that you bring to the broadcast. Tell our listeners how they can connect with you.
Well, thanks. My website's AmericanMinute.com, and I send out a daily email like the ones we talked about today called American Minute they can sign up for. And also I have several books, and there's one that's called Miracles in American History, Volume 2. And it has a chapter on Martin Luther King Jr. and on Booker T. Washington. But AmericanMinute.com.
Amen. Well, thank you, Bill. Well, you've been listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. It's always a joy to be able to share with you every weekday morning at 8:05. And so thanks for being with us today. Go out, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And He will use you as His witness. I'll be with you again tomorrow. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.